Welcome back to DMnastics, the gym for dungeon masters to work out their mind. I'm Matt Keel, special guest here for Celeste at the moment. You may remember me from Detention the Dragons. Well, I'm back, everyone. And of course, I'm here with longtime host, owner of the gym, curator, all those good adjectives, verbs, and pronouns, and things like that.
It's me, DM Neil, a.k.a. Jote Maniac. And today, I think we should have a fun little game that we play called reading an article about fun little games that we could play in our games.
Here's the thing, Neil. I'm a little short on time, so could this perhaps be a mini game?
And not only that, we're back on the gamer who uses SEO to the utmost. Dungeons & Dragons 11 best mini games for your campaign. If it's not on this list, it's hot. Hot garbage is what I am led to believe by this article. So for our mini games, there are 11, which is also fun because sometimes they add a whole bunch more after they start updating the article. But what is the one mini game that you think you need to be adding to your own campaign?
Okay, Neil, I feel like there are a lot of options that are here. And this article does provide some genuinely interesting variations. Now, the one I am going to argue for, because my wife and I watch a lot of these programs on television, that's right, Cooking Challenge.
Oh, the number of episodes of Chopped that I have watched is staggering. Also, the way that they... This is not a necessary tangent. But oftentimes when you go watch like something that's already been like recorded, like, oh, I'm just going to watch season 2, episode 15 of Chopped.
Sure.
But the way it airs, often when you start, it shows like the last seconds of the previous episode. So then I just have that mind where like I see that person, I recognize their face. So then when I go to watch that episode, I'm like, well, great. I already know who wins. I don't want to watch it.
With that type of show, that is a spoiler that just ruins the whole experience.
The whole thing, from start to finish. It's like you're literally hitting me with commercial breaks before you reveal. So, But why would you want to add, well, I mean, other than, I mean, already having all of the tricks of the trade, and mine would be the old school Iron Chef of shouting at the top of my absolute lungs the secret ingredient that they need to use.
Yeah, number one, don't even get me started on Classic Iron Chef. I love Classic Iron Chef. I think it's the best. I think
agreed.
No other show has created so much drama and characters within the program, within a cooking program, I should say. It is cheesy and fantastic, and I love it. Now, let's get back to Dungeons & Dragons. So I think this list that we're talking about has a lot of really good ideas. But sometimes when you get like you hit up one of these lists, one of the issues is they give you some of the obvious things, like, of course, gambling. Okay, cool. Like, yeah, have little gambling mini games within your D&D setting. That's super fun. But sometimes I like to push the boundaries of Dungeons & Dragons and see where like the narrative can take us. And I love the idea of a cooking challenge so much that I had a campaign in which all of the characters were chefs and they were coming together to gather ingredients and recipes for a cooking contest that would take place 1 year later. So there was like,
whoa.
It was a shorter session. So they would have like 12 sessions to go on these different like quests. It was pretty cheesy, but like on these quests to get like super saffron and a mystical recipe by some monk in the mountains, that type of thing. And the thing is that Dungeons and Dragons doesn't actually really cater well to cooking because it's really a game that is designed around survival, character interactions, and of course, battle. So you have to get a little bit creative when you're doing a cooking challenge. So what I like to do is I like to borrow a page from another podcaster and use this thing called a skills challenge. Have you heard of the skills challenge before, Neil?
I have. I love the implementation of them. And I mean, it's not like we're not doing them all the time. It's just there are spaces and places that I think having them be more structured makes the most sense. Like, technically, wandering through a trap-filled dungeon can be a skills challenge, but you just separate those skills out more. I think, though, having a true skill challenge works really good, really well for things like these mini games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So the idea behind the skill challenge, if you want to look this up in a little bit more detail, the list or the rule set that I used is from Rodrigo D. Lopez. He's on the Critical Hit podcast. And essentially what you're doing is it's very narrative driven. You roll initiative, so you know the turn order of the different players. And then the players will then use their turn to describe how they are interacting within the space. So in the scenario of my campaign where they are all chefs, one of the little challenges that they had to work with was they were working with a small restaurant owner, and a local gang came in and they were just demanding food. And what they needed to do was appease the gang. And they needed to do this by completing so many successful skill checks to, you know, prepare food and do other things. Like, there was even like an insight check to like, what type of food do they want? Do they want spicy or do they want sweet? And then if they succeeded, it would be like, oh yeah, they look like a crowd that enjoys a spicy palette of food or something. And then if they're wrong, they're like, this is gross, you know, I don't like fish. So it gets pretty wild and it gets pretty creative without having some sort of like really complete mini game where ginger root is plus one and salt is minus one. It's like, that would be too chaotic. But I love this idea of a cooking mini game. And of course, you could really apply this to any sort of thing. But since cooking was on the list, I decided cooking skills challenge.
I like it. There's a lot you can do. And we'll bring it up now because I started thinking about it on my own. One of the key things with like adding mini games, just trying to figure out how you can involve all your players, because it's easy to put a mini game in that one shines at. And if it's true and you really don't have a way to like have more of the players shine, then make sure that that truly is a mini game and gives that one player their highlight. Or if everyone's involved, then it can be as big as you want, because then everyone's playing their part.
Sure. And for example, to not bash this list, on the list that we are referencing, one of them is a drinking mini game. And a lot of drinking mini games really revolve around a constitution check to see if you can handle your alcohol, or maybe something like a stealth check to like make it look like you're drinking alcohol. And that's really it. So I feel like that is a mini game that really just caters to like one type of character. So maybe if you did a short version of it and really made sure that you varied up your mini games in different scenarios, that would be pretty awesome. But I do like a mini game in which all characters can utilize their abilities to succeed within the game.
This is the weirdest thing, I think. One of the weirder things I've ever thought of is, what if after you started the drinking contest, someone cast Mouth of Holding on you, and then you were drinking them, but they were going to like an extra dimensional space, not your stomach.
Here's the thing. I think that's fantastic. I love weird, clever solutions to problems that have obvious answers to them. So yeah, casting this little portal that is going to just transport the alcohol into a different dimension is a fantastic idea. So again, I'm not totally dismissing a drinking contest. I usually run groups with high school students in a high school setting, so we'll never have a drinking contest.
Yeah.
But I do like any scenario that will have creative solutions. So
speaking of scenarios with creative solutions, the one I chose is the archery contest, which makes me think of the animated Disney film of Robin Hood, because I used to watch that a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'm dressed up like a stork right now. Big long legs, floppy hat.
Oodle-olly.
Mm-hmm. Singing fun, cute animal songs.
Perfect. So what we're going to do for this one, though, is focus primarily on D&D. But what I was trying to think of is like, okay, so archery, but there's a lot of versions of archery.
Sure.
And it depends on what, like, versions you could have. It could be that you've gone somewhere and archery is their thing. Mm-hmm. But that means that you're, let's say you're rogue, how many shots can the rogue pull off in a certain amount of time? And so then you're having dexterity be a key component because they're trying to draw and shoot as fast as possible. How far can someone shoot this bow? It's a huge compound bow, and the only one strong enough in your party is, let's say, your fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And going through these things. Or is it like one of the, like the ski thing where they're on their skis, they go super far away and they shoot the gun a couple times. What if it's that and it's your constitution? What if it's like the image here are some wild, wild versions of arrows. It says arcane archery.
Sure.
But the idea that, like, what if the wizard is involved in trying to create the most interesting arrow, the most effective arrow, the most flashy arrow? So there's a lot of things there. What if someone gets shot and your cleric is super important?
Yeah.
Because you could also have it where there is a competition where you are shooting the other person and you're going back and forth, but you have medical staff on the side. You're ready to go.
That is a hardcore Rochambeau style contest with bows and arrows.
Yeah, but it's okay. Your cleric's there to help out. They just as necessary.
Well, and I think that this is also a really interesting idea as well, as long as you encourage players to get creative with the contest. Because when you think archery contest, you think clearly the fighter or your ranger are going to be your obvious candidates for bow and arrow type contest. But maybe you have a wizard there that is casting some illusionary magic, a gust of wind, silvery barbs, to interfere with other players or other NPCs that are participating in the contest. Maybe the rogues are being sneaky and they're like cutting the little fletching or the feathers off of the arrows so that when they do shoot them, they go off course, that type of thing like that. So I think that the archery contest, the main event is, yeah, who can shoot a bow well, but there are so many things and creative ways that your players can participate in the mini game to, for example, help show or help support the actual like contestant within the game.
I love the idea. Like there's, you know, there's this area of competition, and then above it, is there scaffolding? Is there stands? Is there something like that? But the players being selected to help increase the level of difficulty to make the best show, the best contest available.
Mm-hmm.
Fireball, lightning bolt, but doing all these interesting things.
I would love if a druid transformed into like an eagle and just snatched an arrow out of the air. And it's like, sorry, can't help it. Bird just took your arrow away.
Oh, or your monk deflecting them.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Yeah. Again, so one of the key things with this one is that it does really feel like there are a lot of spaces and places that you can get your whole party involved in this one. So, yeah, I might even go a little above mini and just make it a game that the players could interact with. And again, having them come back to it. Maybe it's an annual thing or a monthly thing that they could go to and see what new interesting thing there is there.
Yeah, I love the idea that this could be a thing where they try to win some gold, win like a cool item. Maybe they win a favor from a person because now they have like increased reputation in the town. Again, there's lots of options for your minigame.
Perfect. If you want to increase our reputation, you can always review us. Head over to Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. Leave a rating and review. Word on the street is that it's super helpful. And of course, or you want to send us an email, you can always do so at dmnastics@gmail.com and let us know the mini games you've added to your table. And of course, on social media, we're at @DMS_block. I am at @JoteMoniac, and Matt is somewhere, but it's a mystery.
It is a mystery, but maybe just go check out old episodes of Detention the Dragons, especially if you're looking to learn how to be a better DM as a teacher or a better DM for new players.
And as always, a huge thank you to the Bards over on Bombarded for our intro and outro music, and you can find them at bombardedcast.com.
Neil, let's head to the post-workout cooldown and stretch with the light bulb.
light bulb.
Today on the light bulb, we have an interesting one. I think it'll be a little, well, we'll get into the weeds of some information that I found. But the essence is, oftentimes I realize that, like, the nerdy things that I had as a child, they do not age well. Oftentimes they don't. But at the same time, like, the things I want to put up, I still want them to be nerdy. So what I stumbled onto recently is a 20-sided dice patent print of of pulling some of the images from the patent for a 20-sided die.
Mm-hmm.
It looks great. I like it. It shows the numeric distribution. It shows all of the information. It has that patent style. It's a really common thing that you'll see people put up in their houses, and I think it's great. Would work great in a game room. Would work great in an office. Lots of options here. Now, that said, there's a particular piece of information I just simply couldn't believe.
Neil has been losing his mind about this. We spent about 20 minutes before recording discussing this topic, trying to verify the results, which Neil has verified them. It is a little nutso.
So, Dungeons & Dragons originally came out in the year of 1974. And for reasons completely unknown to me, 25 years later is when the patent for the 20-sided die was approved.
I guess nobody thought about that.
That's the only thing, because did I look up the actual patent number? And yes, you too, dear listener, if you look up US 5909874A, you'll find out that in the year 1997 was when the application was filed by someone to create the patent for the original D20. And that's the other thing for me. It's not your D20 that has 1 through 20 on it. It's the original D20 that has 1 through 0 two times. And back in the day, you would receive that die and a crayon and basically force the wax from the crayon into one set of those numbers to delineate that it was the plus 10. And it is that die that was patented 25 years after it was being used for the game of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, I would like to know the history about this. This really feels like, for example, a person who scoops up like an expired like URL address or whatever. They're like, whitehouse.gov? Nobody had claimed that? Well, we'll scoop it up and then sell it to the White House or something like that. Yeah, someone must have just saw that and said, oh, we could actually probably patent that and sell it back to Wizards of the Coast or Hasbro or something like that. I don't know.
It is currently still owned by individual. So
it's also not weird to me.
Not owned by a company. Now, that said, it would be really interesting to me if a patent fell off and then they swooped on it, or if they just were like, wait a minute, that's not a thing. It's about to be. And then they applied for it. And 2 years later,
yeah,
were the proud, proud owners of the patent for a 20-sided die.
Maybe they patented and then opened up the patent so everyone could have a D20.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be cool? Like the noble file the patent, like some of those early vaccines. Just open it up. Anyone could make it.
And just like the Disney movie, they became the Robin Hood of the D20. They took from the rich and gave to the everyone.
They gave it to everyone. And that's why I now own 400 D20s.
Okay, like this is pulling. I mean, I also really wonder about the legality of the poster, because like this is pulling direct info from the official patent. Like the numeric breakdown in the middle is denoted as figure 20. And that's what it is on there. Like everything is like raw copy pasta.
But are those things like public domain now because they've been submitted to the government?
Possibly, because it is just a patent. It is the patent. You're not using the patent to make the thing. You're using the patent to make a thing out of the patent.
Yeah. Also, I think Etsy has some pretty dubious lack of copyright.
That's true.
You know, enforcement.
Well, there you go, dear listener. We have sent you down the same rabbit hole that we are down. And if you see fit to let us know more information and you have it, please, please do. But with that, I think we'll turn out the lights and head out of the gym.
Before we go, I want to implore you, the listener, to join the forums, the Discord, Twitter, and anywhere else you can find us and take part in these challenges, exercises, and other amazing conversations being had.
And to do that, head over to bit.ly/DMBanter and try some DMnastics. Please don't ask, do you even live?